Who is your daddy?
I am the father.
You fathers will understand.
My father taught me many things.
I got an idea. How about you all sit there quietly while I make dad noises?
Hello and welcome to episode 29 of Fathers of the Grind. I really can't believe we've made it this far. I don't know why people are listening, but they are. So we're going to keep making the show. At least Derek listens. He's one of our most avid listeners. Right, Derek?
Yeah, I definitely enjoy the show. I enjoy, I mainly enjoy, like, critiquing it in my head and thinking how terrible it was. Or, you know, if something's, like last week saying Kojimi, like, for some reason couldn't say the correct name at all, Kojima.
Of one of the most well-known game developers ever.
And, and all that would come out was Kojimi.
Yeah. Well, but, that voice, our number one fan there, that's Derek Teague. And my name is Tim Nestor. Thanks for joining us again if you're a regular listener and or for the first time. Welcome if you are a new listener. So thanks for joining us. We are going to cover a few things mostly related to JRPGs, including one major JRPG that released last week. But before we get to that, I want to talk a little bit about family stuff. We just got back from a gathering of friends, from people, some people from work and their families. We did some food on the grill. Everyone had ice cream afterwards, you know, just kind of that summer cookout, having people over type of a thing. So it made me wonder. It was very fun. It was very cool. Lots of kids there for my kids to play with. But what about your family? Like, do you guys, does your summer food change at all as the weather changes? Or because you're in Florida, do you pretty much, like, are your meals pretty much the same year round?
It's pretty much the same. Lots of hamburgers. Lots of barbecuing, like chicken and stuff like that. And that's
but I mean, that's in November and February, just the same as July for you guys, I guess.
Yeah, there's no stopping the grilling. There's no snow. There's no, I mean, we probably honestly get maybe a total 20 cold days. And by cold, I'm obviously not talking about, you know, really, really bad weather, but probably, you know, 40s, 50s as the lows. We probably get about 20 of those a year.
Okay.
If that.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. No. Most of the climates that I've been in my entire life, actually, all of them have had some sort of cold winter. Oh, hang on a second. What's that? Go ahead and say goodnight. Night. All right. Have a good sleep. Bye bye. My kids are going to bed. Our food definitely changes depending on the time of year. Like, we'll do a lot more chilies and soups during fall and winter months. And then, of course, during the spring and summer, and then well into the fall as well, we're doing lots of grilling, lots of chicken, burgers. Actually, the other night, we just had kebabs on the grill. Those were amazing.
Nice.
So I just thought I'd ask that because I figured for you, it's probably about the same. But I know that for me, it definitely changes depending on the season. So we'll still grill in the wintertime sometimes. It'll be icy and frigid, and yet we really want to grill up these steaks that we got or whatever. So we'll stand out there in our, you know, winter gloves and stuff grilling. But
no pan-fried steaks for you?
No, we haven't done that. Do you do that?
I've tried it before. Like, when I was doing low-carb and I didn't want to grill, you know, I bought some steak and pork chops and stuff like that, and I just pan-fried it all. It's pretty terrible.
I've never done that before. No, I've seen it, of course, on, like MasterChef. We watch that show a lot, and they do that kind of stuff all the time. But yeah, I've never tried that myself. But
I mean, it was all right, but I think it was more terrible because I did it. Like, if somebody who knew what they were doing was doing it, probably would have done a great job, but...
Right.
You know, it did its job for doing low-carb.
Gotcha. Yeah, we like it, though, because around here, at least, the grocery stores start to fill out with the kind of fruit that we love. Stuff like blueberries, lots of watermelon coming in, things like that. So, yeah. By the way, what's your favorite combo of fruit? Like, the two fruits that taste best together, like, when eaten in the same bite, even. Like, what fruits go best together?
Best together. I know what my two favorite fruits are.
Right, what are your two favorites?
Definitely pineapple and watermelon, probably the two worst. I would say strawberry and banana. I love those two together.
Yeah. So. There's a reason that that's a flavor of just about every fruit-flavored yogurt and drink and everything else.
And that's usually if I go get a yogurt or even go, like, I think it was the other night we went to Sonic. I don't know if you have a Sonic.
Yeah, we do.
I don't know how Colorado is. But
We have to hunt for our food here.
There is no Sonic. What are you talking about? But when I went to Sonic, you know, they had the banana strawberry shake. And I was like, yep, I'll take that.
Yeah, exactly.
That's my favorite combo.
Yeah, the reason I asked you that was because I just today actually had some blueberries and sliced up pineapple, and that combo was great. Because blueberries aren't super sweet. Mm-hmm. And pineapple, of course, is like overly sweet. So that combo was fantastic.
Yep. I'll have to try anyway, that. I haven't tried that.
Now I'm very hungry again. We just ate dinner and I'm hungry. Oh, and we stopped at Culver's on the way home to get some of their whatever their ice cream. It's kind of like a DQ Blizzard, but it's the Culver's version. I forget what it's mm-hmm. called. But we got some of those. I got chocolate with Snickers mixed up in there. And
nice.
It is amazing.
Nice.
Okay. Now that we've talked about how fat we are, yeah, and how hungry we are. For you, it's like well after 10 p.m. You should not be thinking food. I apologize.
No, I'm really actually really stuffed. I had a terrible eating day, but again, I burn a lot of calories, so I don't even care.
It was birthday stuff, though, for your family, right? That's
yeah.
that's a day
like,
when
I
you're
didn't
allowed
even hold,
to...
Yeah, I didn't even hold back. I was like, you know yeah. what? I'm planning on not to, you know, go off track here, even though we haven't even technically started the show. I'm planning on doing, like, a 2-shake-a-day diet, so I'm going to do shake for breakfast, sensible lunch, and then a shake for dinner. We'll see how long this lasts, because I'm trying to drop some weight.
Do some before and afters.
Yeah, so I'm going to try to do that. So, this weekend, I was like, you are allowed to do whatever the heck you want, so... Yeah.
It'll help your before. It'll help your after look way better if your before looks awful.
Exactly. If I can gain a few pounds before I start my losing weight process, then I'll feel better about myself. So.
Yep, that's the way to do it. That's what the doctors usually say. They're like, load up first and then get healthy.
Gain 30 pounds and then drop 15. Should work out for you, fatty.
So speaking of activities that help us stay in great shape, let's talk about video games.
Yeah, that's so, huge exercise routine.
Yeah, so what are you playing these days? What's keeping you occupied in terms of gaming?
All right, so we are recording on a Saturday, and I actually, even though I was really, really busy today, I was able to finish the last two chapters in Resident Evil 6, so I've actually completed the game for the second time.
Congratulations.
So this year, I guess this is the year of Resident Evil for me. I made a post like a week ago saying if I actually complete Resident Evil 6... That means that I've already beat Resident Evil, Resident Evil 0, Resident Evil 5, and Resident Evil 6, probably in the last 3-4 months.
That's
all
awesome.
Four of those. And then I plan on playing Resident Evil 4 when it comes out in August.
Finally one I can get on board with. I love that game.
Yeah. I mean, I gotta say, and I want to say this real quick before I move on to the other games I'm playing. First of all, Resident Evil 6 is not as bad as people say it is. Of course, everybody's entitled to their opinion. I'm just saying, as somebody who liked it but didn't love it the first time, I actually really enjoyed it the second time. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was because I knew what was coming. Like, I had a lot of memory from what I played, so I felt comfortable in every situation knowing what I was supposed to do. Plus, the high def, I guess they're calling it a high def release of it,
right.
Fixed some of the issues that I did have of it. Game has still way, way too many QuickTime events, but they made the QuickTime events better. I'm not going to go into detail of how they did it. I'm just going to tell you they're way better.
Okay, cool.
So that made the game way more enjoyable. And while I was playing it, since I just played Resident Evil 5, and I just finished Resident Evil 6, and Resident Evil.
You can get it.
Talk.
You got it. You can do it.
I'm going to blame Tim for all these speech impediment issues that I'm having right now because he's making me record late at night. So blame Tim. Hashtag blame Tim. But anyway, so Resident Evil 7 is supposed to be, you know, back to its roots, back to its horror, which I'm excited about. I am not going to complain at all. I think that's cool. But as I'm playing Resident Evil 5 and then I'm now playing Resident Evil 6, I would absolutely love it if Capcom would do kind of like a, here's our horror Resident Evil, like maybe their numbered series, and then also release a third-person action by the main studio, not some side job crap games we've been getting in the past, like Raccoon City and all that crap, so don't even bring that up to
or
me.
Or Umbrella Core?
Yeah, that one I didn't even buy because that was garbage, but I would love like a Resident Evil side game. You know, it's not part of the number series that the fans know going into it, while it's going to have some horror elements, would be more action-packed, like 5 and 6. Because I have so much fun with those games. So I'd love to see him. Anyways, I had a lot of fun. And I'll go through the other three real quickly since I took a long time on Resident Evil 6. But I played Bloodborne last night with Moose. I'm going to call him Moose.
Yeah.
We did some co-op. We went through a whole level together, beat a boss together. I leveled up a lot with him. It was a lot of fun. I like playing co-op, especially since I've already beat the game twice by myself. So if I'm going to play it more, I would love to play co-op. So hopefully I can play with my brother and some of the other some of the other FOTCA members.
Maybe you could probably get Dan on there too with you, Dan Phillips.
Yeah. And then the other two is I've started Divinity for the third time.
Awesome.
I'm actually right in the same exact spot that I was the other two times. So let's see if
I can.
Is it
pretty much the village that you and I got to when we got to
that time travel
lady, and she gives you instructions, and that's pretty much as far as I
got through. I got through the cave, and now I'm in the city trying to solve a murder or whatever.
The problem is that's where the game kind of slows down because it's got such a forward moving opening, and you're learning the combat, and you're going from area to area, and then it slows down in the town. You got to figure out what to do next. And that's where it kind of lost momentum for me. And it's unfortunate because it's a cool game. It's a very cool game. So even you saying it reminds me that, hey, I liked that. I need to go back to that.
Well, and what inspired me to do it is obviously I have access to it on the PS4. I actually own it on PC as well. But I saw it was dirt cheap. Well, I won't say dirt cheap. It was $15 on the Xbox One. But
which is
a great deal,
by the way. Yeah.
Yeah, which is a good deal. And I had just gotten $7 credit from Microsoft from all the pre-orders I did. Which seemed a little off, so I don't know what the heck that is. I felt like I should have got more. So I basically was talking to Jesse while we were playing Rocket League and was like, hey, if I buy this on the Xbox, would you want to co-op it with me? Because Tim and I did it a couple times, and then we just stopped. And he said yes, so I bought it. I just started it by myself, but hopefully I can co-op that with Jesse. And then the last one is, and I have not played much, and we'll definitely be talking about this later, is I Am Setsuna, and so I'm not going to say anything else. That's it.
Cool.
I just started it.
What was it that took us away from Divinity? I feel like it was Assassin's Creed for me, because I took a deep dive into Syndicate.
Yeah, because Divinity
came out like a week before,
and then so did Assassin's Creed.
So they put out the Uncharted collection, and I played through Uncharted 1, and then I started Divinity, and then I played Assassin's Creed a ton until the big November game started dropping.
Yep.
And I never went back to Divinity after that. I started going through the Uncharted.
Well,
and
I think you got in the Metal Gear either before or...
No, that was after. Yeah. Was
it before Assassin's Creed or after?
Oh, that was before Assassin's Creed.
So you did get into it right when it released in September.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep,
okay.
I did. That's actually when we first started Sony's approved game sharing program that we're involved in.
Yeah, the one approved by Kaz.
He tweeted us directly. It's legit.
Yeah.
It's just kind of interesting to think back on games that we've liked and we've kind of broken off from playing, and it's like, why did I... Oh, it was because of this other game, or maybe it's because of a TV show or whatever. Something else caught my attention, but anyway. All right, so stuff I've been playing. I am working my way through Rise of the Tomb Raider. I finally come back around and decided to give that game my full attention, because when I first started it earlier this year, I just wasn't in the mood to play a game like that, which is weird because that's typically my favorite genre. But anyway, so I dove into it, and I love it. Absolutely love it, and I can't wait to play more.
Do you know how far you are without saying a spoiler?
Yeah, because it gives you the percentage on the load screen, like on the title screen. I want to say I'm in the 30% range, and I'm not sure if that means for the... I think that means for everything in the game. So for the story, story-wise, I'm probably halfway through, I would guess.
Okay.
But I'm doing a lot of side stuff, doing lots of the optional tombs. Those are fun. Some of the collectible stuff, doing some side missions for some of the NPCs that pop up.
I like how open it is. I did like that.
Yep. I do like it. I like it a lot. It's a great game. I love the way the Uncharted and Tomb Raider have drawn inspiration from each other over, back and forth here over these big releases, and both have been great in their own way and in some shared ways. So anyway, like that game a lot. I'll give you my thoughts on it once I finish it. But the story is better than I gave it credit for. Like, listening back, if I were to listen back to that episode when I was kind of, not really hot on that game.
Just
I just
don't think
I
you were in the mood for it.
I just wasn't.
Think you were in, yeah.
because I love the story now. I like her motivation. I like the characters. I like kind of the twist that happens relatively early in the game. It's great. It's really great.
Yeah, I liked it. Story-wise, I liked it way, way more than the first one.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I'm looking forward to replaying it.
We're also still, our family's still playing Pokemon Go. I'll admit, we're still playing it. My wife's still playing it too. Yeah, no, we're still playing it. It's fun. Like even tonight on our way home, we stopped in the parking lot near the Culver's where we stopped. And we were just kind of moving from parking space to parking space and catching Pokemon. The kids were all gathered around and we were catching stuff. We challenged the gym, stopped at a few Pokestops to grab stuff. It's still just a fun diversion from time to time, especially when you're out and about. So
I think it's like we talked about last week, so we're not going to need to talk about it anymore, but I just think it's a really cool like family game. I mean, I personally deleted it because, surprisingly, my kids really weren't into it. I mean, Emily was playing it a little bit, but I thought Eli would get into it. He didn't care, so I just deleted it.
Do you think it's because it's on a device that's not theirs and they have to ask permission for it all the time?
I think if Eli had access to it, yes, he would play it if it was on his.
Yeah, so like our kids don't walk around asking for it a ton. They do sometimes, but when we turn it on, they certainly gather around and want to go at it. So anyway, Pokemon Go. I just saw a headline that is it had the most first week downloads of any app, not just game, any app in iTunes history. So that's serious. That's for
free
real.
Free to play, the future. Yay.
Yeah. Oh, free to play.
Free to play.
Speaking of which, Snobby Tim looks down on your early bedtime. All right. and the last game I'm playing is I Am Setsuna, and that's actually been getting a bulk of my attention this week. I'm still playing Rise, but the last few nights I have chosen to go the route of I Am Setsuna. And like you said, we're actually going to jump into a discussion of JRPGs, and I will talk about I Am Setsuna a little bit later and ask you your thoughts on it too. But suffice to say, it is definitely it's meeting exactly what it said it would meet, and that is, hey, we're an old school JRPG. You know, we're bringing back the old classics, like, and they keep mentioning Chrono Trigger. There's a reason they keep comparing it to Chrono Trigger. So we'll talk about that here in a little bit. So that is what I am playing. And let's talk about things that are happening with Comic-Con. So I'm not going to jump into Comic-Con headlines, but because it is San Diego Comic-Con weekend, there are some headlines that are coming out of there. And there's also headlines just around it that we didn't get to yet. So I'm not going to go through, you know, all the biggest announcements or news items, but I do want to just highlight a few things. The first one has nothing to do with Comic-Con, and that is, speaking of Rise of the Tomb Raider, it is coming to the PS4 on October 11th. Did you read about what's going to be included with this?
Yeah, I looked at a lot of the extra content that they're giving. Pretty excited about, and I'll let you read it off, but they're going to have a first-person VR, like little side thing. I don't know if it'll be good. I think it's supposed to be kind of like a mysterious type setup where you're like investigating your mansion or something. I don't know.
Yeah, like the overgrown old manor. You're going to be going and trying to solve some kind of mystery, which seems like a good fit for a VR type experience.
Yeah.
Speaking of VR, real quick side note. I tried to head over to Best Buy to check it out because as a current non-believer in the future of VR, I'd like to try it to see if, just to see what I think about it. And I want to come back and talk about it and tell you guys what I think. But whoever the Sony rep was, or whoever Sony hired to be their rep, I'm not sure if it was officially Sony or if someone they outsourced it to, whoever it was a no-show at the local Best Buy, even though they were scheduled for that. And even the Best Buy manager was super frustrated that night. But anyway, I'm hoping to, it's supposed to be scheduled again for this coming weekend. So
quick question about that.
Yeah.
Were there a lot of people there, or were you the only nerd?
My buddy Jake and I were the only nerds, but we showed up around 4:30 maybe, and they were supposed to be there from 3:30 to 8:30. So it's possible that people came out at 3:30 and were told they're not here. So
yeah.
I'm not sure, but from the looks of things, there was a surprising lack of others wandering around looking for the VR thing.
I saw my brother today. He came to my son's birthday party. I'm glad he decided not to ignore their
shout out to Jamie.
Infection.
What's up, Jamie?
Yeah, so he came and I asked him, you know, hey, how was the VR? Because he did go yesterday. I had planned to go with him. He had texted me. He was like, hey, you want to go check out the VR? And I was like, yeah. You know, and I didn't see a reason why I couldn't because
exactly, yeah.
We both got off work around the same time, and we both work, like, probably 5 minutes away from each other, and Best Buy's on our way home. So I was like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
And then, no lie, like, I don't know if my wife has some, like, radar.
She does.
Like, 2 minutes later, she texts me, and she's like, need you to come straight home. We have no way into the house. You're the only one with keys. So I need you to actually.
So you have a long commute, right? Like you couldn't just turn around and go back.
Then. No, I was not going to do that because she wanted me to go to Walmart, pick up the kids from her, and then take them to the house and let them in and all that. Gotcha. I was like, oh, thanks, bro. Yeah. So I got blocked.
The radar is real.
Yeah, it was blocked. I did want to check it out. His feedback that he gave was that. From what he played, he liked it. He thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Not cool enough to drop $400 to $500, but cool enough to drop $200 to $300.
I feel like my prediction is I'm gonna feel the same way, but who knows?
But I don't also think he got to play that cool of a game. Like I know he wanted to play Eve Valkyrie, and he didn't play that.
Okay.
And that's the one that gets rave reviews. I don't know if it's a game I'd care about personally. But the reason he didn't play it, he said, is that the only way they had it set up was inverted controls. And he was like, well, I'm already going to be confused with a VR headset on my head. I don't think inverted controls are really going to help me on a, you know, action-packed game like that. Mm. So he
went
with, I don't remember the game he went with, some other game. But okay. He said it was pretty cool, and the experience was pretty cool. So I'm looking forward to it. I think I'm going to keep... Because I was kind of debating, like, do I keep my VR pre-order? I'm only $200 away, and I'm sure I can find other stuff to trade, or maybe I'll just pay the $200 in cash. Or do I cancel that and get the Gears of War Xbox I really, 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 really want? Because I can't, I don't think I'll be able to find a way to get both without paying $500 or $600, and I don't want to do that.
Right.
So... I was considering it, but I was also like, dude, you already own an Xbox. All you're doing is getting a better Xbox, whereas a VR is going to be a totally different experience.
I love the idea that there's two Derek's having a conversation about this. There's the common sense, level-headed Derek, and there's the have money, must spend Derek.
Well, there's the peaceful, nice Derek, and then there's the rageful, you're an idiot Derek.
Yeah.
And they usually have nice conversations in my head.
All right, let's bring it back to Tomb Raider real quick. That was the little VR side.
Yeah.
Side
that's
road.
Your
that's
VR
fine.
News
that's fine.
For the week.
There's a touch base with VR there. And by the way, we will touch base again. Hopefully one or both of us will get a chance to try it, and we can bring you our thoughts on it then. But so Rise of the Tomb Raider, it will indeed have a VR support for at least a certain mode that's going to be included in this PS4 version. It's going to come out on October 11th. It will have all of the DLC to this point. It will also include a new mission called Blood Ties, and that mission is going to involve protecting the mansion from an onslaught of zombies, which sounds kind of cool. I believe it's also going to be co-op, right? Where you like it's a survival survival mode where it's like endurance basically. And the way I've heard it described is that it's almost like think of something like Don't Starve, where you're constantly running out of energy. You need food and warmth to stay alive because that bar is constantly depleting. It's going to be a similar type of concept where you're just trying to survive as long as you can and fight off whatever baddies happen to be around, animals or soldiers, whatever. So. Sounds like a really interesting co-op mode that actually generated some interest on my side. And hey, do I want the PS4 version of this? I don't know. I'm just now playing it through on Xbox, so I have a feeling when it comes out on October 11th, I don't think my interest level will be high to buy it at full price. But I could see myself, you know, going for it when it drops in price on the PS4. Just for those extra modes.
I want to replay it, and I'll probably play it on the PS4. But with October, especially October 11th, you're talking, let's see, October, I think 7th, or wait, I'm confusing days here, but I think it's either, yeah, October 7th is Mafia 3, Gears of War 4, comes out on October 11th, but you can get it on October 7th. My point is you've already got huge releases.
Well, and don't forget that just 11 days before that, 12 days before that, is Final Fantasy 15. So I can't see myself wanting to buy
another
version.
Nobody cares about Final Fantasy 15. Not a single person gives a crap about that.
This is a good test right here. This is a good test to see if our friends Mark Allen, Daniel Freitas, or Clayton Pace.
You say this every episode, and everybody fails our tests.
You're right, but that's why I like to say it. That way, the two people who do listen are like, "Yeah, we listen, but they don't." All right, yeah. So yeah, come on, gang. All right, so Rise of the Tomb Raider coming out PS4 October 11th. Very cool. It's exciting for PS4 owners who've been holding out from buying Xbox One, or maybe they just waited for it because they like that platform. Whatever. It's coming. Be excited.
Crank Flark.
Another piece of news that's coming out is that just came out actually over Comic-Con is that World of Warcraft is developing an audio drama called The Tomb of Sargeras. And that is sounds very similar to what Halo did with their Hunt the Truth series. It's going to be 4 free episodes starting on October 1st, leading up to the big expansion for World of Warcraft called Legion, which drops on August 30th. And so I thought this was interesting for a few reasons. Number one, I am not, and I don't think this is any surprise, I'm not the biggest fan of the Halo lore. I think the Halo games are really high quality, pretty interesting. Some of the stories in those games has been pretty great. But I wouldn't call myself a big fan of the lore. Like, I don't know all the intricacies of it. I haven't read the books. I don't read the comics. I don't really care that much about it. I haven't watched, like, the Nightfall series or Forward Unto Dawn. So, like, I'm not that big into it. But that series really hooked me. I thought it was fantastic. It was really well acted, really well written. I really liked that. And so as soon as I heard this, I thought, well, this is a great idea, you know, to generate some interest in your IP before, you know, dropping this expansion for a game that I still cannot believe is as active as it is in World of Warcraft 12 years later, or maybe more. So anyway, that's coming out starting on August 1st. So starting in about a week and a half from now, or 2 weeks, I guess, from now. So there you go. There's that. What's your level of interest at all in an IP or a game like World of Warcraft that you don't play, but you hear that there's some sort of audio drama or something that's going to be free like that that you could download and listen to? Do you have any level of interest at all?
No. I wasn't even that interested in Halo until I think it was like Jesse and some others were like,
"Yeah,
everybody, you got to listen, you got to listen, you got to listen." And even at first, I think I was resistant. I was like, "I don't really care." And then I actually gave it a shot, and like you, I was like, this is awesome.
Yeah, and I like that the main guy, Benjamin Thoreau, was voiced by Key from Key and Peele.
Yeah.
Pretty awesome. All right, so moving on. That's kind of a cool piece of news, especially for those of you who might be Warcraft fans. By the way, I did go see the Warcraft movie a couple weeks ago. It's not bad, but it's definitely not great.
Yeah.
Is it
one of those where it has good action, but everything else is stupid?
It has very good action, and the visuals, for the most part, are very good. If you like the way that Blizzard puts together some of their cutscenes and some of their cinematics, you know, the quality of visuals is certainly there. You can tell money was spent to make it look pretty sharp. But there are definitely times when it looks and feels very video gamey, where you kind of are removed from the quote-unquote reality of it a little bit. And the writing and acting is a little disappointing throughout. So I was disappointed by that. When you think about stuff like Lord of the Rings, even The Hobbit, which I thought was much lesser than Lord of the Rings, but was still very high quality, the writing and acting, even though those movies have their flaws, the writing and acting is hard to criticize. And so Warcraft was definitely missing out on those fronts. And I don't think it was the actor's fault. I just think the story was paced and written in a way that was hard to really like it. But it was entertaining. Mm-hmm. It was entertaining. If you have access to it for free or for cheap, I recommend giving it a shot. If you like those kind of movies, but not amazing. Keep your expectations in check. This audio drama is something that I will definitely be downloading, and I'll let you know if it's any good. Okay. Let's talk. Speaking of like movies and TV shows and stuff, I know that this is technically a gaming podcast, but most of us, if not all of us, watch Netflix. And I think you and I spent some time in the spring talking about our thoughts on Daredevil season 2. One of the best seasons of any show I've ever seen was Daredevil season 2. I love it. Absolutely love it.
I think the only show that can compete with Daredevil is Game of Thrones. And I think Game of Thrones just had its greatest season. So I would put Game of Thrones season ahead of Daredevil's, even though I really, really love Daredevil's season 2.
Well, and the thing about Daredevil season 2 that I liked so much is that I was afraid that... Spoilers if you haven't watched Daredevil season 1. Okay, so skip ahead, I don't know, 5 minutes or whatever, just to be safe. Daredevil season 1, at the very end, he finally gets his suit. And I remember thinking, this feels a little cheesy, because the whole show felt so cool when he's wearing kind of this makeshift all-black suit. And then he gets in his real, like, the dark red, plasticky-looking suit. And I thought, ah, oh, he looks kind of hokey. I don't know if I like this as much. But season 2 didn't let it become a full-blown, like, this is happy superhero time. This is Ben Affleck, and Evanescence is on the soundtrack. It didn't go that direction. It stayed very dark, very gritty, and it maintained that character development, and it introduced one of the most loved characters, I think, this year, and that is Punisher. John Bernthal just killed it as Punisher. So yeah. we won't dig into that again. Go back and listen to that episode if you guys want. It was sometime in late March, I think, we talked about it. Or maybe it was early April. But they just announced officially, and did anyone doubt this, that Daredevil Season 3 is coming. They announced that Luke Cage, another series from Marvel, is coming, and they showed a teaser for that. They announced that Iron Fist is coming, which actually has the actor who plays Loras Tyrell, speaking of Game of Thrones. He's going to be Iron Fist. And then, of course, a combination of a bunch of these characters, including Jessica Jones, is going to be the Defenders. So Marvel and Netflix are just pushing these IPs forward at a rapid pace, and it's pretty exciting because I do love me some Netflix, and so I'm excited to see these different series.
It's exciting, but I also, and you know, maybe I'll be one of the few that feel this way, but I hate when things get like over flooded.
Right.
And I feel like the superhero between movies and now shows is getting really, really flooded.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
To the point where I'm worried. It's kind of like, think about it this way, and we don't have to go on a long tangent, but like, I love, you know, the animation movies that came out. You know, what's the big one? The big developer of them. With the Pixar. You know, they started making
The Incredibles, you mean?
Yeah. So they started making these movies, and they blew up, and now every 5 seconds...
Okay.
You get another movie like that, and the problem is it takes away from how great they really are, because they're all basically doing the same thing, just a little different.
Yeah,
because
you had A Bug's Life, and then all of a sudden you had Ants, and you had Ant Bully, and all these other ones started coming. Yeah, but the good news is that many of them are upping their game, so companies like DreamWorks, with IPs like Shrek and How to Train Your Dragon, they have, in my opinion, met the quality of a Disney and a Pixar. And then Disney themselves, who had hit quite the slump with movies like Tarzan, and they just weren't quite landing. Chicken Little and things like that, they weren't quite hitting. And then all of a sudden, they discovered Tangled and Frozen and Wreck-It Ralph and, I'm blanking out, Big Hero 6. All of a sudden, Disney rediscovered themselves. And so I do like that companies like Pixar, or in this case, you know, Marvel and Netflix, are able to kind of set the tone on what the quality for these things can be. And I think that's why I say the word excited, is because Daredevil is so high quality. And I did not finish Jessica Jones. I only watched an episode or two. Someone convinced me that I should go back to it. I didn't love it, but the quality was definitely there.
I want to try to watch that, because I only got through 2 episodes.
Yeah.
And I won't say that it was terrible, but it didn't hook me.
It didn't hook me either, exactly.
I don't like watching, like, women who are just, like, jerks the entire time. Like, I don't
But men
care
who are jerks,
about,
that's
well,
fine.
Yeah, well, men can be jerks. But I just didn't like how she was just, like, she felt like a character I've seen 1,000 times. Like, I'm the strong, independent woman who doesn't give a crap.
Well, for me, it came out in a very busy gaming time. I know that's what it was for me. And so when I had free time to watch something,
for me,
play
it just
something.
Didn't hook me. If it would have hooked me, like, you know, like when Daredevil 2 came out, season 2 came out, it wasn't like it was slow. It was a choice. I was like, dude, I can knock this out in like 2 days, and I like this show.
And I don't
want to
do anything else. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
No, that makes sense. But I do think it's going to be interesting to see how some of these very unknown... I mean, Jessica Jones was unknown, too. These unknown IPs do, like Luke Cage, Iron Fist, even the group of Defenders. You know, like having Daredevil as their, you know, leader, I'm assuming, or at least a main character, is going to be helpful because he's a familiar face, well-loved already. So we'll see how that goes. But Netflix and Marvel, into the year 2017, have a lot of stuff coming your way. So All right, sweet. And the last headline that we'll share with you is one that I think IGN broke, and that is there's going to be a surprising, quote-unquote surprising, Rocket League announcement coming sometime in the next 2 weeks. And here's the actual quote here. This is Vice President of Psyonix, Jeremy Dunham. He says, as we get closer to Rocket League Championship Series around that time, which is early August, August 6th and 7th, is when we, that's when we're going to start promoting our next update and wait till people see it. This is his quote. He says, wait till people see it. We've got something brewing that a lot of people have been asking for in different forms, but is also very surprising. It's going to be interesting, but it's going to be cool, too. So people are, of course, making all sorts of guesses what this might be. Is it going to be
first-person shooter mode?
For FPS mode, where you can get out and shoot through the windshield, and it becomes a very violent game. Of course, people talked about cross-platform play, but I think that'll happen before this surprising reaction. It'll either happen or it'll be completely shut down before this.
Well, I think, and I didn't read the article. I know Jesse White made a post about this, and I just gave, you know, answers that I've, you know, first-person shooter mode, I was obviously joking. I don't think he got the joke or he thought it was pathetic. But he was like, FPS, stupid. But I also said, you know, cross-play. But now that you've actually read the quote, clearly he's not talking about cross-play.
Exactly.
And if he is, then he's hyping something that everybody already knows anyways.
Right.
So that's kind of a stupid way to do it. So I think he is talking about either like a new mode
Could be.
A totally different way to play this game.
So here are some thoughts that people online have. One of them is they're going to install some kind of garages for saved cars. So if you have a certain paint job with wheels and your antenna and your topper that you like, you can save that as one of your and then like put it in a garage. So the idea is that whatever setup you like for certain car builds, you can have those ready to go instead of having to set it up every time. So that's one thing. More customizable vehicles, custom goal explosions, beach ball and power boats mode. So maybe something on water. People have been asking for that apparently, where the ball would float in water and you're in like speedboat or powerboat type of
thing. That's a great idea.
That could be kind of cool. So there's lots of different, those kind of fall in the categories of features and modes. One of the ones that I thought, and I don't know if there's an outcry for this or if it's just me. Maybe this is just a snobby Tim idea, but I love the idea of tournaments of some kind and or co-op seasons. But I like the idea of being able to set up tournaments within the game because that's part of what makes the game fun. So if we have...
I would love to be able to create like a season mode where like
you can
get eight of your buddies
and
create an online season like Madden or something like that.
And you set up schedules when you play and then you go, oh, that'd be great. So that'd be great if they do that. I don't know if that's their plan or not, but we'll find out. It very well could be just a new version of a sport. I've seen some people say, hey, it's going to be volleyball or something.
I don't think they would hype it up, though, if it's something they've already done. I think they're going to do something they haven't done before. I don't think it's just going to be, here's a new mode that you're going to care about for 30 days. I think it's going to be bigger than that, based off of his statement.
Yeah. Well, and they've done some cool things with Mutators, you know, Hoops Mode, Snow Day. Those things are all interesting. They were fun in short bursts, but when it comes down to it, I just go right back to that core game. I actually really don't like the Tokyo level that they added, and they put it in ranked mode. It's fine for Mutator mode, but man, I hate playing that in ranked mode because of that extra shelf on both sides. It just ruins the flow of the game, but whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, so as soon as we hear more about that, we will, of course... share it with you guys. So I know there's other news. I know there's things coming out of San Diego this weekend, but that's all we will cover for right now. So what I want to do for our main topic of the show to kind of wind things down for this week is to talk about JRPGs. And it's good timing too, because there's not a lot of big games being released. We're actually coming close to the beginning of what I would consider almost be the fall season, because August has a bunch of big games coming out. So when No Man's Sky drops, that's when we're going to start to see these dominoes of big games coming.
I'm surprised we didn't talk about No Man's Sky.
So we will. We'll get to No Man's Sky when it comes out. We'll leave that conversation.
No, I mean, like, did you hear the news about it, how they're getting sued?
Oh, no, I didn't hear that yet.
Yeah, somebody's trying to sue, and I don't know all the details, but I was actually talking about it with Moose last night. They're trying to sue them, Hello Games, for using... some formula or something that some guy created or some company created.
Like for the randomly generated, or not randomly, but procedurally generated stuff.
Yeah. And I guess their patent covers like 3D and 2D textures or something like that.
Oh, interesting.
It doesn't specifically say video games, but I think it falls under what Hello Games has created with No Man's Sky. So basically, here's what I think. They just want money and attention. But I don't think No Man's Sky will get delayed. But I know I saw online the immediate reaction from several gamers was, oh God, is this going to cause a delay? Because if it's a serious, like it's going to go to court and it could cost a lot of money.
That would kill that team.
Yeah, it could be something Sony says, hey, dude, we got to back off this.
I mean, remember when Sean Murray and his team posted the picture of, hey, we're done with the game? And you could see like tears in their eyes. Like they are so ready to let this game be released. That would be rough.
Yeah,
I just looked it up. It looks like it has to do with this super formula that helps to generate the universe, basically. And so, yeah, who knows? I'm just now kind of glancing over it.
I don't think it will cause a delay.
They'll have to pay him off. Maybe Sony will.
Yeah, they're going to have to pay him off. And that really sucks because...
It does.
I don't know. It just sucks. Because I don't think they intentionally stole anything. I don't think they did anything.
Okay. All right, well, so we will get some more No Man's Sky news. And if, of course, that becomes a big deal, we'll hit that next week. But No Man's Sky is coming out soon, so we'll talk about that in the near future. But we are going to talk about JRPGs. One of the big releases of July is actually a smaller release. It's a $40 game that came out this past week called I Am Setsuna. And it was put out by Square's new development team, Tokyo RPG Factory. Which, I mean, that tells you exactly what they're there for. Like, no, you make RPGs. Get back in there. No, you cannot go home.
Our next game, we want to create a ping pong title. What do you think? No.
Like, sir, why does the door lock from the outside? Why does the door lock from the outside, Square? What's going on? So they're going to be churning out RPGs, apparently. I feel like this game came out pretty quickly after being announced, but...
I think they said it was only in development for like a year and a half, 2 years. I listened to PS I Love You.
Yeah.
And that's what Colin was saying, that they had decided they were going to make it, and then 2 years later it was out.
Yeah.
You know, like a year and a half, 2 years later, it was
and
out.
Now they're allowed to visit with their families for a week before they have to go back to the factory and make another one.
Yeah.
So,
a week.
So yeah, not even a week, a day. So I Am Setsuna, you've played it for a little bit. Can you just give me your quick thoughts on what's your impression of the game so far?
I like the vibe, the feel that I get from it. Look, I don't have a history of JRPGs, and I haven't hid that from any of our listeners like you do, but I did, you know, play some of them, and I did always like the way the old school, like, Chrono Trigger type RPGs looked. I liked that 16-bit layout and that big, like, over-the-top world, kind of like almost like A Link to the Past is how I always looked at it. And so I was excited to see this, like, legitimately excited, because I was like, awesome, they're going to bring back like an old school style RPG, but it's not going to be completely ugly, so I'm going to love it. Then I found out as it got closer, you know, a lot of reviewers were like, hey, this game's only 20 hours. Now, 20 hours for a game is a long time, but when you're talking in RPG world, that's actually really, really short.
Right.
But that is a turn on for me, not a turn off. Like, I like that.
At least at this stage of your gaming life.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I mean, even back in the day, because again, you got to remember, I wasn't a huge JRPG player, and we'll talk about it because we're going to discuss, you know, our favorites and stuff like that. But one of the games that I played, one of the first ones, and I won't mention the name, I didn't know what I was really playing. Like, I'm playing a JRPG. Like, my friend told me this game was awesome, so I bought it, and this was back when I was, like, buying a lot of games, and so I gave it a shot, and it just kept going and going and it became exhausting.
And they do.
And I played it. Yeah, and I played it when my first child was born, like, right around that time, and I was like, it was, like, right after she was born, and I was like, okay, this game needs to end. Like, this is
She's graduating high school and you're still playing it.
Like, this is getting frustrating. So, anyways, my point is I've only played a little bit. I like what I've played. I've only played, like, an hour and a half. I beat, like, the first boss fight, and I'm starting to move forward with the story. I've met a couple new characters. And I like it. I like the snowy setup. Like, I like that everywhere you go, you're just covered in snow. I mm-hmm. like that winter look. And I like the fact that it's shorter and to the point. Like, most of the people that critiqued the story said, you know, they didn't say the story was amazing, but they didn't say it was bad. They said it was good. And they liked that it was, like, it stayed on task. Like, it was right. like, here, go from here to here to here to here and here. And you never feel like you're getting knocked off. Because a lot of my biggest issues with JRPGs, and this is, you know, I understand a lot of fans would disagree with me. My biggest issue is I don't like the fact that they want you to grind for like 50 years to beat a boss. And I'm like, no, I don't, or do 50 side quests. I'm like, no, just let me play a JRPG that has that feeling, that vibe. I'm not saying you have to make it super easy, but just let me play it and go from story to story and maybe do a side quest here and there.
And
that's what I want out of JRPGs.
Well, and this
I guess
one...
I kind of want Western RPGs, basically.
Well, it's funny because I think this one is more accessible than any JRPG or Western RPG in recent memory. I mean, think about everything from Fallout to the Skyrims and the Witchers of the world, where those games are not very accessible. I mean, you've got a steep learning curve right from the outset, tons of gear and stats to worry about, a million side quests you could do. Like, to me, that's the opposite of what you just described, what you're looking for. And so, like, you know, straightforward, give me from story to story. This is exactly that. It's incredibly accessible. The battle system is very straightforward. You can either attack, you can do one of your, what they call techs, or you can use an item. If you use a tech with a character who happens to have a combo, that if those two techs are used together, they'll combine, or even a three-character combo, you could do that. There is a momentum meter that builds up. It's an active time thing, so if that fills up, then this little momentum meter starts to fill up, and once those fill up, you can kind of do a critical hit. It's very straightforward. It's very basic.
I got that to fill up, like, the momentum meter. Isn't it like a little light that shines?
It's like a little circle, a little globe that fills up, and then once it fills up once, a little orb
appears. I didn't know how to use it, though.
So
like,
when
I was
you,
like, I don't know what I'm doing.
It can hold up to three orbs at a time. It's called a momentum meter. And every time it fills, it generates one of those things. And it'll sit there. And then it'll start to refill again. And you can once you fill up three, it won't fill up anymore until you use them. And basically, anytime you attack or heal or use a tech, there'll be a little flash of blue light right above your head right after you choose your action. And if you hit square between then and when the action happens, you've got about maybe 2 seconds at the most to hit it.
Oh, okay.
Then it will activate. So either it'll do a critical hit, it'll sometimes, some of their attack moves, their momentum add-on will actually heal you while you hit. So some of them have some really cool side effects.
Okay, cool.
And so that the momentum system's pretty straightforward. I think I did hear that PS I Love You Too, where Colin was talking about this system called the Flux system. And so they borrow so heavily from Chrono Trigger and from Final Fantasy VI. It's almost to the point of laughable at times. Some of the names of the moves, X-Cross is straight out of Chrono Trigger. Luminaire. Luminaire is a magic move that's actually kind of a story point later in the game. But Luminaire is one of Chrono's strongest moves at the end of the game. And so, like, there's some certain things that are used that are very directly taken out of Final Fantasy and out of Chrono Trigger. Also, the main little items that you use to give you your techs, your magic moves, and your support abilities, those are on these little items called Sprite Knight, or Sprit Knight, not sure how to pronounce it. I think Sprite Knight. And that is basically Magicite from Final Fantasy VI, which you have to equip that then teach you moves as you level those things up. So again, they're borrowing from all these other systems, but it's done in a very good way, very accessible way. The equipment that you use, it's almost like Mario RPG. You have a weapon and you have an accessory. And that's basically it. That's all your equipment. You don't have to equip your, you know, your chest plate and your boots and your gloves and your hat. You don't have all these slots to fill. You basically just have your weapon, which has attack and defense stats for magic and for physical. And then you have an accessory, which has slots to put the Sprite Knight in. And those give you your moves. So the better the accessory, the more slots it has available. to then equip moves. So as you progress in the game, you'll eventually have spots for 8, 9, 10 moves at once. You can have Cure, Cure 2, you can have Lightning, you can have all these things all at once.
Has it been challenging for you at all? You're further through. Like, where are you at right
I'm actually
now?
Getting close to the end. I'm almost on the final dungeon. I've got most of the characters now. It has gotten very challenging. It was a breeze for, I would say, 75% of the game. And now that I'm hitting this last quarter, a couple of these boss battles have been really tough. Like, some of these bosses are healing themselves really well. There are times when I start a battle and I'm like, whoops, I needed my guy who has Dispel so I could stop him from curing himself over and over or whatever. So it gets really challenging. Some of the strategy you have to use is it's actually pretty fun. It brings me back to the old RPG days. But the good news for those of you who like more accessible games, it never gets so complicated that I couldn't understand it. It's never something where you have to, you know, like, for example, in Pokemon, you don't have to do some kind of super EV training or something like that. You just have to basically put in the right character and make sure they have the right move equipped, you know, fire beats. It's not like Pokemon, but like, if there's a lot of ice bosses, and if you have fire, you'll probably do a lot better than if you use a lady who has ice powers, for example. So it's pretty straightforward. As far as the characters go, I think it's really well done, and I thought it was bad at first. I thought at the beginning my character looked like this luchador soldier who is on this mission. Someone gives him a mission, and he accepts it without questioning it, and then he almost completes it. He's supposed to kill this sacrifice girl, but then he instead decides to help her complete her mission. They give you the illusion of dialogue choice, but really all you're doing is deciding if you want to be a jerk about it or be nice about it, but it's still going to go the same direction. So the dialogue choices are kind of a joke, but they still give them to you. Even though your character doesn't speak directly, you get to pick what he says. But all the characters have an interesting backstory, and I didn't realize that till about halfway through the game. So just stick with it if you've started it and you're wondering when does the story pick up. It does become really emotional. Some of the characters actually have some very interesting backstories, just a few twists in the way that some characters are connected with each other that I didn't see coming. There's some really sad moments too, you know, characters sacrificing themselves and stuff like that. So it's really, really good. I wouldn't put it on the level of a Chrono Trigger, and here's why. So much of it is clearly drawn from that game. Everything from the way the characters move around in the world, you've got three characters in a party at a time. Their moves are called techs. They combine with either a double or a triple, you know, combo move. You see enemies in the world. You can either run around them or you have to go walk right into them. Everything's borrowed from Chrono Trigger. And you said you haven't really played that game, right, Chrono Trigger?
No, only a little bit, yeah.
So here's what's lacking, though. It's lacking that kind of uplifting, fun feeling that Chrono Trigger has from start to finish. At the start of Chrono Trigger, you're going to this festival, and there's games to play, and there's upbeat music, and there's lots of different styles of music, and there's colorful worlds, and there's trees, and sometimes there's snow, and sometimes you're in the jungle, sometimes you're in medieval times, sometimes you're in this futuristic ship. But in I Am Setsuna, you are always in this washed out white snowy world, which looks really cool and beautiful, but it gets bland. Like right now, I am sick and tired of seeing my trail in the snow behind me. I'm like, please take me somewhere else.
See, I wonder if they did that, and I'm sure it has, like, purposes for the story, like, hey, this is, you know, set in, like, maybe a couple of months' time. I don't know. And I don't need to be told because I don't want to be spoiled. But I wonder if it was, you know, hey, you guys only have, like, a year to make this game. So they were like, oh, well, then let's just do it in one setting so we don't have to change that.
There are
that.
Reused assets all over the place, for sure.
Yeah.
And that's not a problem. That's not a problem. If you played old school JRPGs, you know that assets are reused a ton, and that's a good way to kind of save space and time when developing the game. It's not really about what's the environment like, but it definitely wears on you because a combination of the washed out, snowy, kind of hazy setting mixed in with this soundtrack that is completely one piano. So the entire soundtrack is one piano, and at first it was like, wow, how serene and beautiful. And then it became like, huh. This is supposed to be exciting, but the piano music isn't quite getting me excited for this moment. You know, it's trying, but it's not the same as having a full orchestra or drums or something. And then later in the game, as we're walking through the world, I'm like, this game's kind of a downer. Like, everything's cold and snowy. Most of the villagers are kind of sad because things aren't the way they should be. And the piano is just constantly chiming in the background.
I think that's what they wanted, though. I think, and maybe that's why I'm kind of drawn to it. Because, yeah, like, I knew you were, like, in the beginning of Chrono Trigger, you're at this festival. Like, I thought that was all cheesy and dumb.
It is kind of cheesy and dumb.
Granted, I didn't play
dumb,
it when
gives
it was,
you,
like, releasing.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
yeah.
I understand what you're saying. Like, having a good mixture is a good thing.
Right.
Again, I'm only an hour, hour and a half in. I might, if I go and play through the whole thing, feel the exact same way. And you are actually saying exactly what Peter Brown from GameSpot said. He liked the game. He gave it a 7. But his biggest issue with it is exactly what you're saying. He's like, I guess one of the guys I was watching, it's called The Lobby. And so Peter Brown was on there, and then another editor from GameSpot was on there. And he was like, yeah, I was walking by your desk, and I was like, wow, that game's really beautiful. And Peter Brown responded with, huh. And he was like, I was surprised by that because I thought Peter would love it. And Peter was like, yeah, but I responded like that because I'd been in that for 20 hours.
Right.
And it had gotten old. Like, well, yes, it is beautiful, but it got old.
But it's not just the snow and the icy look everywhere. It's that it's the same type of snow and icy look everywhere. So if you're outside, there's going to be knee-deep snow, and you're leaving in a trail behind you. The trees are covered in snow, and there's some color breaking through. And it looks very pretty, and even after playing it now for many hours, it still looks pretty. But when you go into any kind of cave or dungeon, it's going to be an icy floor with the combination of gray and ice on the walls. That's what it is pretty much everywhere. And there's a few dungeons now that I'm in the later part of the game that change that up on some of the interior. It really kind of throws you for a little bit of a loop. But for the most part, the overall game still has a very, here's where it's set. We're not moving out of this area. This is the kind of environment that they're in. Maybe they'll even explain it somehow. Maybe they have and I've missed it. But the overall dungeon design is another issue. So take out the snow and the ice and just kind of the coloring for a second. Every dungeon has a very similar build, where you've got a series of pathways that connect to kind of screen-sized areas. They fill your screen, and there's enemies in there kind of moving around aimlessly. And you want to try to, when you approach them, you want to try to hit them from the side or behind. That way you can get your active meters, your ATBs built up to start the fight, which is great. And you get one momentum orb to start too, which means you can do a critical hit right off the bat. That's a great way to fly through dungeons without needing to use potions a lot, because you can kill them before they can hit you. So that's all great, but the dungeons are all the same. They each have these little, again, like square or rectangle-sized areas that have enemies in them, and they're connected by little pathways. And sometimes you have to go find a switch to flip to, you know, create a bridge to get to the next area. But they're very basic, very straightforward, and very repetitive. And now that they're getting much longer, some of the dungeons are getting incredibly long, and they require some backtracking, I'm starting to feel a little bit of that fatigue, like, wow, I'm glad this game is only in the 20-hour range.
I was going to say, you might be thankful that it's 20
exactly,
hours.
Exactly. So I feel like I'm getting towards the end of it. I'm very anxious to see how it plays out, because I really honestly don't know. A lot of times in these games, you can see the ending coming. That's what made games like, again, Final Fantasy VI, Suikoden, Chrono Trigger, some of these classics are classics, because you didn't really know what was going to happen at the end. It was a big question mark. Who's going to survive? What's going to happen? Why is this happening? Who's behind it all? Very interesting story, and I'm excited to see how it plays out. But if I were to score it, I definitely would give it higher than a 7. It would probably be somewhere in the 8s, and the only takeaway would be the repetitiveness of the dungeons, combined with the enemies aren't that exciting. They're all kind of fluffy animals. They're weird, but they do get very challenging. And then, of course, just the overall snowy setting and music has kind of worn on me. It's beautiful. The music and the snowy setting are equally beautiful, but, you know, a little tiring after a while. So.
Yeah, I felt that same way, and this isn't a JRPG, but I will say this. I tried to get into Mad Max, and to me, everything about Mad Max is basically yelling out, this is Derek's type of game. It has almost like...
He's angry.
Twisted Metal type... Yeah, it's angry. It has like a Twisted Metal vibe to it with your car... it's very arcadey. You're out in the open world, and you can shoot and blow up and ram, and I love Twisted Metal. And then you also have the third person like action fighting mechanics that are kind of like a Batman style gameplay, and I love that too. And they do a pretty good job with all that. Even the open world is, you know, beautiful for what it is, but it is the exact same thing over and over. And again, I'm not knocking the game because it's a Mad Max game. What else are you going to do? Are you going to throw a random snowboard in the middle of the desert? So they were limited, but it kind of just wore on me. And I was like, by the time I got to 10 hours, I was like, I'm doing the exact same thing over and over. And I'm doing it in the exact same place over and over. Mm-hmm. Even though they're taking me to new places, it all looks the same. It all feels the same. Right. And so it kind of wore on me. So when people talk about that game and they're like, oh, I really liked it or I really hated it or whatever, I always say, you know, even though I didn't finish it, it's a good game. It just didn't hook me because it got repetitive and old.
Well, and one of the things that this game takes from Chrono Trigger as well is a very, very much a lack of customization. So in Chrono Trigger, each character has a set of moves they're going to learn depending on what level you hit, and that's going to be their move set. You can equip a different weapon if you want, but they have a set amount type of weapon they're going to use too. I Am Setsuna takes that exact play and applies it to their game. You know, you've got certain weapons that only one character can use. Certain magic types, only one character. Like, only one character can use lightning. Only one character can use fire. Only one character can use, you know, fill in the blank. Yeah, exactly. So, and they've got it set up that way, and that's fine. They give you the illusion of customization because of the limited number of slots you can put your moves in. So you can pick which ones you take in the battle, but it does not quite have, like in Final Fantasy VI, one of the things I loved about that is any character could learn any move depending on who equips what Magisite, and then you can build any character the way you want. Now, some are more prone to be stronger, and some are more prone to have higher intelligence, so you want certain characters to have certain moves, but you technically could teach anybody anything, just depending on what kind of time you want to put into it. So that had a ton of customization, almost overwhelmingly so, whereas this is much more single track. And the same goes for the story itself. You move from village to village, cave to cave, mountain to mountain, according to how the game leads you. And it's not until late in the game that you get, I'll just call it, a mode of transportation to then get around the world and go back. You can revisit areas that had chests you once couldn't open, because towards the end, again, they give you the ability to open some of these doors and chests you couldn't open before. Again, very much like Chrono Trigger. There was little black boxes in Chrono Trigger that you had to get a certain power attached to your pendant to open. So very similar that way. They're giving me some reason to want to go back to some villages and look for some of those treasure chests that I skipped over. But for the most part, it's very linear. It doesn't appear to really... it doesn't want you to explore a ton, even though they do open it up for you to later. There's not a lot of reason to, except for going back to... And there are some enemies that will take you by surprise. So you might be going through a dungeon and you run into an enemy that looks a little different than the ones you've been fighting, and they'll one-shot kill your entire party, and you're like, what just happened? They're a special enemy that's kind of a little bit off the path, and I think I've run into like four of those now, and I've had to run away from all those battles. I figured I'll come back when I'm stronger. So they do seem to have some enemies that who knows if they'll give you some kind of special reward for beating them. So they've included a few of those little Easter eggs too. Not Easter eggs, but little bonuses you can go back and try. So there you go. I Am Setsuna, high quality game. If you want something accessible.
Hopefully you sold some people on it.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully. Hopefully you'll play it too. I want to hear what you think about it too. So. All right.
We'll see. I mean, I've got other stuff to do, you know, especially if I'm going to replay Bloodborne and Dark Souls 3 58 times.
Oh my goodness. So. All right. Well, speaking of Blood Souls, give me your, and we need to kind of wrap up here. I'm sorry we kind of stretched that part out a little bit. But give me your top JRPG games ever. And I know you said you're not a big JRPG guy, but you have played enough, even if you haven't completed them, to give us your top five.
Well, there's really only two that I care about.
Yep.
And that's Death Row and Game Dev Story. Tim wrote the notes again, so that's what I get. Those are my top two.
You would have
picked
Death Row anyway. You would have said Death Row no matter what.
Well, yeah, of course. Death Row is the greatest game ever, and people never play it because they're all jackasses.
Second only to Game Dev Story. Got it.
So I wrote down like my top five, and apparently I can't count, so I put six. But I figured I would mention it, even though I didn't beat this one, but I put Lost Odyssey as my number six. I really, 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 really like that game. It was really good JRPG on the 360. It had a really deep, interesting story.
It was pretty.
It was one of those that I was like, man, I wish I would have beat it, but I never did.
It was
did.
Multiple discs, too. It was a big game.
Yeah, it was a big game. And then I put number five, Ni No Kuni.
Never played it, and I need to, but I never played it.
It's really good. It has a Pokemon vibe to it. You go and capture all these animals and
Sold.
Or whatever they are,
I'm
beasts,
in.
And you level them up and they fight for you. So you're just a little boy with a wand who's not that powerful, Like, if you attack with the wand, he really doesn't do anything. He's got to use his, you know, little Pokemon.
And I've heard the story is really touching, too. I don't know what that means.
That's why I liked it. That's what kept me going. And it was a decent JRPG as far as length. It wasn't too long unless you wanted to do everything.
Okay.
So I did finish that one, and I did like it.
Okay.
Number four, Xenoblade Chronicles. This is not Chronicles X.
Right, it's the original Wii version.
Yes, right. This is the original one. It's a really, really, really good one. Normally it'd be higher up, but you'll kind of see why it's not. It dropped because of a couple games. Number three is Final Fantasy X. Now, that's the first... That was the one I was talking about earlier.
That was your gateway drug.
Yeah, that was the one I was playing when my daughter was born, or right before she was born, and then when she was born.
So Final Fantasy X is the last one on your list that is actually a JRPG, but go ahead and give us your top two.
Yeah, well, and I put these because if they're not counted, then that list before is my top five, basically.
Okay.
Or top four.
Yeah.
But if many people consider these games JRPGs, so I put Bloodborne at two and Dark Souls 3 at one.
Okay.
So those, if they're considered JRPGs, which they are made by a Japanese RPG developer, so I consider them to be, but they're not your traditional JRPG.
I would say that in the technical definition, being developed by a Japanese developer, and they are both definitely RPG games, you could technically make that argument. In the traditional sense, I would say not even close.
Yes.
Not even close to a traditional RPG.
Even close. And that's why I said I'm fine with it not being there, but I went ahead and added them because I know a lot of people would be like, dude, those are JRPGs.
Yeah.
So.
And then there's others, and I'd probably be one of those others who would say, no, they're not. They're not JRPGs. Like, not traditional JRPGs, but.
No, they're not traditional.
But yeah, they're worthy of your list, and I always, you know, we give each other a hard time about this series of games because I am not a big fan, and you are a massive fan, and so are many in our group, and they're just better at games than I am, and that's fine. But the bottom line is a lot of people love these games. They're incredibly high quality. It's fine with me if you want to put it on your list, even if you're wrong. No problem. No.
I mean, it's impossible for me to be wrong.
Oh.
I mean, Game Dev Story is definitely top JRPG, and nobody can argue.
All right, let me give you my top five. Number five for me would be Super Mario RPG for the Super Nintendo. I know there's been other ones since then, like Paper Mario and the Mario and Luigi Saga games.
That one's the better one.
But that one's, it's way better. I love Geno, love Mallow, love the fighting system. It's very simple but very fun. Cool story, too. Not bad. And using Bowser on your team was also great. Number four would be Final Fantasy IX. I loved that story with Zidane and Garnet and the whole crew there, Snyder and all those guys, Freya. Very cool story. Great battle system, really fun side stuff. I loved the card game they included, and a very satisfying ending to that game, too. So Final Fantasy IX is one of the better Final Fantasy games. And then number three would be Final Fantasy VI, which is, in my opinion, the best Final Fantasy game. It's not the best looking, obviously. It was on the Super Nintendo, 16-bit sprites. If you don't like that style of game, I totally understand why it's hard to play it. But man, is it good. It's got a great story. Each character has super interesting backstories and motivations. Some heartbreaking stuff happens. Some big surprises happen. And like I mentioned earlier, there's some amazing customization in the battle system and the character setup there too. So Final Fantasy VI, wonderful game. My top two. Number two would be Chrono Trigger. We've talked about it a lot already. The only reason it's not number one is because it does have some limiting systems. There's not a lot of customization. What your character is going to be is what it's going to be. Like, you can't really change the moveset. There's not a lot of different types of things to equip. But the game itself is still an absolute blast. Has one of the best stories in any game ever. And it has, I think, up to 12 different endings, depending on how you beat the game. You can even beat the game, if you do a new game plus, right at the beginning, you can go fight the boss. There's a secret way, once you learn the game a bit, that you can, because of the time travel mechanism, there is a way to access that boss right out of the gate. So... And that gives you a different ending, too. So there's happy endings, sad endings, and everything in between. All right, and number one for me would be Suikoden 2. I think it's the most emotional and most satisfying game I've ever played. You can recruit up to 108 characters to join your team, and I think a good probably 80% of them can actually join you in battle. Some of them are just there to be, you know, shop owners and chefs and stuff in your castle to help provide you with items. But a majority of them can be used in battle. There's lots of different combo moves. There's tons of things to equip, tons of magic to learn. It's just an incredible game. Very, very epic and a very emotional close to that game, too. Man, a great story between two best friends, including one of their sisters. So there's this group of three friends. And it's a very emotional story. There's some twists and turns, and the motivations are believable on both sides. It's very, very good. So those are my top five, and they're actual JRPGs. Let's see.
No, Dark Souls 3 and Bloodborne weren't on there, so it's a really crappy top five.
What was the very first one that you played? Not the first one that got you into them, like Final Fantasy X, you know, 10. What was the very first one that you ever tried, regardless of what you thought of it?
I think, and we talked about this in an older show when I was talking about my imaginary made-up cousin, we played co-op to Secret of Mana, and I played that a little bit. I don't know how far we got into it. It's so long ago, but I know I co-opted it with him. And then the big one was when I bought Final Fantasy VII, and I thought it was something it was not, and I ended up hating it.
Yeah.
So... those were the first two that I remember. Maybe I played something else, but those are the first two that I have like a memory of.
Yeah, my first was Final Fantasy VI, and I remember I'd seen other ones before, like the original Final Fantasy. I think maybe even, Final Fantasy II, perhaps maybe something like Mystic Quest. I feel like I saw a few other ones
I know my cousin had those, so I know like I sat there and watched him play Final Fantasy II and stuff like that, but I don't have my own personal memories.
Exactly. So my first one that I fired up and I held the controller and started from the first screen was Final Fantasy VI, and that was not just my first one, that was the one that got me into this style of game. So, and yeah, I already talked about most recently, I Am Setsuna, and I did play through Persona 4 Golden, probably got about 8 hours in, maybe close to 10 hours, and it's a great game, it really is, but I hit this moment of repetition with the way those dungeons are set up as well, and I like it. I just didn't love the battle system. I thought the story was intriguing and the setting was cool, but it wasn't everything I thought it was going to be. It was overhyped for me because everyone talks about Persona 4 Golden, so I like it a lot. I might go back and play it someday in the distant future, not anytime soon.
I'd like to play Persona 4 more. I've played a little bit of it, and I had like the kind of the same feeling you did of liking what I had played, but never really got hooked. And the only reason why I didn't get hooked is it has nothing to do with the game. It has to do with me going, it's a JRPG, I'd rather play something else.
Oh, okay. No, but it had a cool mystery. I mean, you said you like mysteries, you know,
yeah,
so it's got like these disappearance and murder mysteries going on. So there's definitely a draw to go back and finish the story.
Now, that being said, I do like all that. I'm not a big fan of, like, their anime, like, art style.
Okay,
And same thing with, like, Tokyo Mirage Sessions. They have, like, all that little Japanese anime, and they start doing some pop music singing, and I'm like, what? But overall, and that's one of my recent JRPGs is... Tokyo Mirage Sessions, I started that a month ago, and then I Am Setsuna, and I'm still slowly getting through Sessions, and I really, really, really like the combat system. Again, you're a veteran, so I don't know if you played it, you'd be like, I don't know why Derek's so excited about this, but for me, the stuff they're doing is really cool. They've simplified it, but at the same time, there's a lot of strategy to it, and I've hit some really difficult bosses. But I really, really like that game. Hopefully I'll be able to play and beat that one. And I probably want to continue that one over I Am Setsuna right now.
Okay.
So that's why I'm like, we'll see if I do. Because if I'm going to play a JRPG, I'm going to go with Tokyo Mirage. Because that's the one I'm already invested with the characters. I'm invested in the combat system. The only thing I don't like, and this is a big complaint for me, and this is personal, I'm not knocking the games, I'm not telling JRPGs to change because Derek sucks at games. I hate, in JRPGs, and I've ran into this several times, this is what happened with Lost Odyssey, this is what happened to, and I'm forgetting the name, but another one on the 360 that I played, and it's happened a couple times on Tokyo Mirage. where the way the dungeons are laid out or way the a certain area is laid out, it's confusing. And I don't know where I'm going. And a lot of times it's mazes. Like, it's intentionally done.
Right.
Like, oh, it's Eternal Sonata. They did that. They give you, like, this maze where it's intentionally done.
Lots
to
of forks.
You.
And, like, do I go right or left? And then.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I get. I have a terrible sense of direction. So if you're not going to tell me where to go, I just go in circles. And then I get frustrated. And that's what happened with Lost Odyssey. That's what happened with Eternal Sonata. That's what's happening with Tokyo Mirage, where it's like, I love the game. I want to beat the game. But I'm sick and tired of going through the same mazes over and over again.
See, those things frustrate me too, but for different reasons. And for me, it's that I hate picking the one that actually moves you forward with when there's an idea in the back of my head that, you know what, there was probably a treasure chest.
Hardcore nerd.
Oh, gotta get the treasure.
I went the right way. I'm pissed. Derek's over here whining because he keeps going the wrong way. Tim's pissed because he's going the right way.
Yeah, because I want to go the right way last after I've collected all the items. I got to get all the items.
Lost is awesome.
I have to discover it all. All right, so that's your wrap-up of our discussion, the great JRPG debate there. But I do know that we've got a few listeners, at least, who like JRPGs. So we've had some interesting responses on the Facebook page too. So if you are in our Facebook group, go track down that post and add your thoughts if you haven't already. And if you are not part of our Facebook group, make sure you join us at Fathers of the Grind on Facebook. That should wrap us up for now. Derek, what I wanted to close with is one of your favorite things. I'm not going to ask you to do anything. I just want you to soak this in. Okay? Are you listening? All right.
Yeah.
How does the moon cut his hair? Eclipse it.
I have no idea. Oh my god. The worst jokes ever. Didn't they have a good joke? Why didn't you just steal one of the good Facebook jokes? I thought there was a good one on recently.
That was a good one. I don't care what you say. That was good. All right, guys. Thanks for listening.
I hope somebody listens to the show and calls you out. I'm tired of people calling me out. People, call Tim out. I get it. He's nice. Oh, we love Tim. Tim's nice. Derek's a jerk. Call him out.
Yeah, but wait.
Please.
But wait. Eclipse it.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. Terrible. We'll see you guys later.
Who is your daddy?
I am the father.
You fathers will understand.
My father taught me many things.
I got an idea. How about you all sit there quietly while I make dad noises?
Night. I just said night. I mean, what if somebody's listening to this in the morning?
They usually are.
Like, oh, good night.
I can cut that out. That's because usually you record at night and you're usually like, night.
Good night.